Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. It's Gareth Barker hosting this week because Stephen was somewhere else at the weekend and hasn't seen any of the football. So I'm joined by Wise Men Say regulars, Mickey Luff. Good evening, Mick.
Good evening, mate. How are you doing?
All right, yeah. And Richard Easterbrook, who made the perilous journey to Plymouth on Saturday.
It wasn't perilous as such, lots of it.
So now in films, like if there's like a bit in it where someone jumps out on somebody, it's got to say like this film contains mild peril.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of feel like it's that because any journey that is that long is perilous because it's there's elements of peril.
And like most modern films now, it went on forever. You could have watched half a Ridley Scott's latest film in the time it took us to drive between Seaham and Plymouth. Technically Cornwall, actually. So, it was good fun, though, like character building.
Yeah, well, it is a character building jaunt when you tend to go all that way and then lose in a rather frustrating manner. One of those days has been the sort of phrase, and I found myself sort of during the game kind of saying it's going to be one of those days. And I know, like on comms, Danny was like, it's going to be one of those days, but I feel like we've had seven of those days this season. It feels like where it's just, you know, off the top of my head, Cardiff, you know, was a prime example of that, you know, where you've lost the game and you haven't scored. I mean, from a perspective of somebody who was actually there, what was your view generally, Richard, on the way the game went?
I think it was really frustrating because, I mean, first half, we didn't play badly enough to warrant being behind, I thought. I mean, the stats bore that out in terms of how much we did dominate the game. I certainly wasn't disheartened by our performance in the first half. And the second half, I thought the changes that were made were really good. We attacked really well. Aushish looked a really decent prospect as a kind of the furthest forward midfielder, letting kind of Job drop back a little bit alongside Neil. And yeah, it was just one of those things where the strikers seemed to get a lot of the ball but couldn't do anything with it. Like in the first half, Rusin couldn't stay on his feet, kept falling over. And then obviously the second half with Mayenda's chance where he took that horrendous touch, then didn't think to cut it back, just had a shot anyway. It was just chance after chance, but it was...
He'd already made his mind up, hadn't he, there?
Yeah,
frustration where
I don't really blame him for that because he was obviously in the whole body shape to have a shot. But yeah, I can't really put it down as one of those days because we've had those days before where we've dominated and just needed a little bit of quality, maybe relied on Ahmad last season to come up with it. But, you know, we do have Jack Clark in the team who has provided that little bit of quality. And it's frustrating that it just didn't happen for us. But we can't keep writing it off and just holding our hands up and going, we'll have these days because we seem to have more of these days than other teams in the league, or certainly in the top half of the league.
What are your thoughts, Mick, generally on what you saw in terms of that, in that sort of one of those days mm-hmm. vibe?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you've already pointed out. I think if the last three away games that we've had, I think if they happen, one happens in August, one happens in January, one happens in March, you look at the games and you go, oh, well, there was a one-off. How do we not win them games? But like you've pointed out, when it's such a wider trend, I mean, going back to the 30th of September when we beat Sheffield Wednesday, that's the last time we won away. We've scored one goal since then. Yeah, we've hit the post quite a few times, hit the bar, but like you say, it's worrying, and it's interesting you touch on the strike of Eric, because what I'm worried about with the strikers is, so it's a trend generally with our kind of recruitment that players take a while to get up to first-team standard. So even like Ahmad last year, it took him until after the World Cup break to really start showing his quality. Same with a lot of players we signed, like Barr and Michu, we didn't really see anything from them later on the season. Now, that's okay if you're a midfielder, you can come on, you can have a cameo for 20 minutes, you can look bright. But when you're a striker and you're having that bedding in period, you've like 4 months into the season and we've not, sorry, 3 months into the season, we've not scored yet from a striker. And that's just really worrying, because I don't think strikers quite have that luxury of a time to bed in. And we need kind of like productivity from them almost immediately. And we've just not had that. And I feel now it's just a case of a player will have a really good cameo and the fan base decide, oh, well, we need to play them up front all the time. We play them up from the start. We don't score. We don't particularly look like scoring. Someone comes off the bench, has a good 20-minute cameo. Well, they're the striker now. And it's just this cycle, which I fear until one of them actually does get off the mark, we're just going to be really stuck in. It does open up the conversation of, do we just need in January to kind of sacrifice our principles a little bit and go, right, we need like a first-team quality, first-team ready striker to come in. I don't think we'll do that, because I don't think that the recruitment process is that agile. But I think it might be a bit of a necessity from my point of view, because this just can't continue in the way that it's going, really.
I think there's a bit of a, like, whenever the argument's made about having a striker ready to score goals, people automatically jump to that being a ready-made championship striker. And it doesn't have to be that. You know, it can be a European striker that's doing it, not in the under-23s, but at a first-team level. You know, there must be the scouting network that we have and the level of data and analytics that we've got at the club now must be able to identify a striker that would be able to hit the ground running. And yes,
is that not Russen though?
Well, that's
he falls into that bracket, doesn't he? Arguably, yeah. Doesn't he?
If that's the case, it's a concern, isn't it?
I know you've got it mentioned, sort of, you're not too struck on him. I think they've got something about him. I think in time he'll get there. But like Mick's kind of pointed out, the problem is a lot of these players, I think it's harder when you're a forward as well. You know, it's...
Yeah. You've got to kind of play your way into form, don't you?
Yeah, that expectation to score goals. And the longer you go without one, I guess the benefit they've got is, because like Mick's pointing out, it's kind of all been, you'll have a go now. They've not had like 10 games of running games where they haven't scored. They've had a few games where they haven't, and then something's happened, which has meant a change has come, whether it be injury or just a tactical change. And I guess the mentality maybe in the support generally tends to be we are a bit more patient because of the approach. So, and we are, there's an understanding that they are very raw in comparison to the kind of seasoned forward you might pick up at this level. So, but then one of them needs to start scoring soon. I think Meander's, well, he's had two appearances and he's looked pretty interesting. I thought he did put himself about when he came on and looked quite good. Put a lovely ball in at the back post where the keeper's made a great save from Ballard's header. You know, I think, and like you say about Oshish as well, I think, you know, it's difficult to see how someone like that will just go on through the season being a sub, because it feels like he makes a lot happen when he's involved in the game.
And, yeah, he's got a lot of quality when he's on the ball, and he does a lot off the ball too.
I noticed when his delivery is pretty good as well.
Yeah, it is. When they were all coming off at full time, obviously Sunderland players came to the away end to applaud them off. Oshish just kind of stood there and looked at everyone. Like, I don't think you could quite comprehend that they were getting a level of praise and losing. Maybe that's just not how it happens in the French league.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. But it was
probably not PSG. Probably didn't lose very many games with PSG.
No, well, no. So I think there's definitely something special in there. And maybe I'm being a bit harsh on the way it is with the strikers. You do play yourself into form, and you know, if it was another situation, had Mayenda not had that ridiculous first touch, had, you know, Rusin not fallen over in the first half, had, you know, Clark shot across the keeper. I know there was other players marking at the time, but when Clark had that chance, and instead of shooting near post, he could have, you know, shot across the face of the goal. We could have been talking about a different game, and then we wouldn't be talking about the strikers here. And it's pleasing that we're managing to score goals in spite of the strikers. It would be really worrying if we weren't, but I just think the difference between where we are now, which is ninth in the league, and where other teams are, is pretty stark. And it's, I don't know. I'm not sure whether like Sunderland fans, certainly not myself, are going to be happy with another nearly season.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Mick pointed out, I know you said there we are scoring goals at home, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, Mick pointed out, what we scored once since the end of September.
Yep.
So it's not like it's a funny one, isn't it? Because you kind of look at it and go, well, it's not that bad in many respects, but we've lost seven games already, so it's just a bit. It's difficult to know what to think in some respects, because you're like, well,
because we're still in touch, we're still there, you know, still part of the conversation. We're not just like on, you know, we're not bottom half. We're not like say Norwich or Stoke are. We're still in there, so you know it's and I don't think January will see any kind of movement in that respect. You don't sign someone like Rusin for money, then just write him off. It's, you know, we are going to be where we are, and I don't think there's going to be that much movement inwards in January, personally. Depending on how happens outwards.
Well,
but, yeah, I just don't see that particular situation being resolved. And I don't know. It just gets a bit frustrating to be always the bridesmaids.
On that, I think it's interesting, you know, with reference to sort of players who maybe were going to leave in the summer, Mick, or there was discussions about certain players leaving who didn't. Now, I was astonished that Alex Pritchard didn't get on the pitch at the weekend. Like, I was just like...
He was?
I mean, I was just like, I mean, I would have had him on at half-time.
Yeah, well, he came down the tunnel, like, well, what, the tunnel wasn't even out. He came down past the fans and into the dressing room, and I was thinking that it was just before half time, before everyone else did. Mm. And I thought that must mean he's getting himself ready to come on. But then he wasn't there, and nowhere near coming on, it seemed.
And then I think for Dak to be ahead of Pritchard does not make a lot of sense to me. In terms of contributions,
I completely agree. I think the difficulty I've got, like, I do agree, either like we're saying Pritchard, because I think he gives us a degree of control that we don't have when he's not on the pitch later on in game. But my kind of worry I've had really throughout the season is because we don't, our whole midfield, it's people filling, it's kind of like round pegs in square holes or whatever, like, because it's just all set up where, like, Ekwar is not really a deep-line midfielder, but he's the nearest thing we have to a deep-line midfielder, so we've got to play him there. Dan Neil really wouldn't want him as deep, but we've got to play him there. We just seem to have a load of, like, really talented number 10s and more advanced midfield players, but nobody to fill in deeper. So it means that people are just kind of make do and mending all over the place. And, like, yes, I think it would be good for Pritchard to come on more, But equally, I'm not sure he solves the issue we have of controlling the midfield entirely, because, again, his natural job isn't sitting in the middle of midfield. He's playing more advanced. So when you've got, like, Ekwar and Pritchard being, like, more deep, like, deeper midfielders, I think it's just a general worry, and I think it's something that we do need to address, this kind of, like, lack of balance I think we have throughout the midfield. We need to have more players who are capable of playing, like, not necessarily even the Corey Evans role, but just to be a little bit deeper, because it's not Job's natural game to do that. It's not Oshisha's natural game to do that. It's not Ekwad's, not Dan Neil's. It's not really any of them's natural role to do that. So I think it speaks more to a general worry I have throughout the team, because I think no matter how we're doing in games, whether we're winning or if we're getting beat, the only real choices we have off the bench are to bring on attacking midfielders.
Yeah.
And that doesn't help in terms of solidity and control of the game. So I think, again, it just speaks to a wider theme of a little bit of imbalance we've got in the starting 11 throughout the squad.
Yeah.
I think the defensive midfield, or the, you know, 6-8, whatever you want to call them now, the options there, like you say, are limited.
We've had Pritchard in that role before, and he's not been great.
But I mean, we didn't make that change, or that we didn't bring Dak in and put him there. We put Dak in an advanced area. So
yeah,
if you're going to do that, there's just no way on earth you should be bringing on Dak ahead of Pritchard. Like, just no, I don't understand it.
No,
it's a bit strange.
Like, I don't think Dak was particularly terrible.
Didn't really do anything, did he?
He just, he was there. It was like, yeah, he was just there.
Mm.
Right, that's my review of his performance. But it was like, you know, obviously last 10 minutes was probably kitchen sink element to the game, where you saw, you know, Jensen Sealed playing as far forward as he humanly can. You can't really read too much into shape. But maybe we need to start thinking more about a shape that can accommodate the players that we have a little better. Like, does it have to be a deep line midfielder? Can we not just have a midfield three? And or can we not consider the likes of maybe try Human a more advanced defensive midfield role? So he likes playing in the centre anyway.
I think the only way it could accommodate is if you went to the back three and had like a box midfield and had two attacking midfielders behind the striker, probably, but then you lose the effectiveness of
Clark and Roberts. Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, it's not slagging off the recruitment, but it is, the squad is imbalanced in parts. In particular, like you said, we've got all these attacking midfielders, and you know, all the changes we tend to make are like for like in forward areas, really. And I don't think that's a bad thing to have those options, because it is good to go. We're good to bring Ashish on, we're good to bring Pritchard on, whoever it may be. We could bring Barr on. But when we have, we're probably not getting the best out of those players, because we have to, everything behind it has to be kind of stuck together with Pritt Stick sort of thing. And if you haven't got that solid base, it's going to be difficult. Before we move on to the Huddersfield game, I thought from a defensive perspective, again, the first goal is like, just, I mean, yeah, Ballard maybe could have got out of him, but he's probably saying, well, go on then. You have a hit from there, and it was a great strike. And it was a great ball for the lad for the second goal as well. Individually, I thought Hume, Huggins did all right again. You know, I guess the talking point is, and I know some people think we dig him out all the time, but I mean, Lugo 9, after being suspended, coming back in a couple of weeks ago, come back in and then deciding he's going to slap somebody, basically. And I just don't understand why you do that when you're one of the senior players, you know, probably the senior player on the pitch. But he is, isn't he? He's 29. I think he's the oldest player.
He's our longest serving player now.
Yeah, and he's a captain. And then Yeah, you get the tussle, you know, if he just walks away, fair enough. But then he decides to kind of, and he's done this a fair few times. And it's just silly. Like, you're only going to harm the team, ultimately.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
I know you've said it before. It's like performative. If it was done in a bid to get the away fans on side, he was miles away from us when none of us saw actually what happened. Mm. It was being played out on the big screen, but as soon as it got a bit fruity in terms of like tackles or defensive or like a kind of potential offside decisions that cut the feed on the mids on the big screen anyway. So we didn't have a clue what had happened. It seems to be this kind of primary fault, this major fault to become the center of attention. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's funny, you know. There's moments where it's really entertaining, and there's moments where we do need that in a game. You know, you need someone to kind of raise the crowd with a bit of, you know, shithousery. But at that point of the game, we didn't really need it happening. We were two goals down, we still needed to get back on the score sheet, and the ball was at the other end of the pitch from where it needed to be. So, you know, there's a lot of responsibility on his hands now. He needs to be a senior pro. He is a senior pro. He needs to be one.
I mean, you know, he kissed that lad before, didn't he, and stuff like that. You're like, why are you doing, like, I mean, that is really bad, really. I mean,
sexual assault, that, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, he shouldn't be doing stuff like that. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Just don't. Just defend and do your job and hold things together if you can. And
it's a job he can do really well.
Yeah, he can, yeah.
He's not a liability. It was odd again that when Huggins went off with what presumed to be some kind of knock, because it wasn't tactical. When Sealed came on, he played right back and O9 didn't move out the right back. It's that will, like it did against Middlesbrough, that will just baffle me.
Yeah.
But I ain't the boss.
You need to get a G-Lay.
Yes, I should. Yeah. Thought about getting a G-Lay last week, actually.
I did yesterday. I was like, oh my God, a G-Lay. And then I thought, no, I won't.
I think just once you hit 40, it kind of just flashes. It's one of your kind of constant thoughts. Shall I buy a G-Lay? Shall I comment on this unknown person's Facebook status? No. And no.
Give it time. So we'll have a little break, and then when we come back, we'll preview the Huddersfield game that's taking place at the Stadium Light on Wednesday evening.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to the Wise Men Say podcast. Huddersfield is at the Stadium of Light on Wednesday night. And it'll be a decent opportunity to try and get back to winning ways and, you know, continue a bit of more of a trend of winning some home games after the defeat on Saturday against the team who are in the bottom five. Essentially, we really do need to make sure we win this game, don't we?
No, 100%. I think we will, because it's like you say, not only are we winning home games, but against the weaker teams at home, like Norwich, Birmingham, teams like that, we have won pretty comfortably. We beat Rotherham at home as well early on the season. I mean, I'd be tempted to chuck in Cardiff being the anomaly, but Cardiff are seventh now in the league. We're above us. So, you know, but no, I think we generally, it's been a strange season in one way because I'm a lot more confident going into these games. Like this time last year, I'd be like, oh no, like Huddersfield will come and do a job on us. Like, well, even though we're a poor side, they'll probably get away with a draw. But I think we are much better at breaking down these teams at home. So I'm really confident we'll win. But I think that's not really what's going to define our season in terms of going up. There's a lot of other areas we need to improve. But if we isolate it Wednesday, I am really confident we'll get the job done and get back the winning ways. But then we've got to back it up with Millwall if we do.
Have they had a few managerial changes? I just feel I can't even remember who's the managers there.
They had Neil Warnock until the end of the season. Then he stayed on for the start of the season, but they've got in Darren Moore now.
Yes, that was it.
If Warnock was still their manager, I'd be a lot more wary going into the game.
Yeah, they played really well on that midweek game last season, didn't they?
And Warnock, he's a manager, even given like his advancing years now. He's so good at like tactically setting up a team in a one-off game to get a result. And I don't think Moore's necessarily got that in his locker. I mean, they've not won away from home since Darren Moore came in. They didn't even beat Sheffield Wednesday away from home. And Warnock, he got a win against West Brom earlier on in the year away from home. So it just shows that the disparity between having a manager like Warnock, who is just so good at this level of doing what he does, and having someone like Darren Moore, who the jury's still out really on whether he can be a success at like this bit higher level. So we've just got to take full advantage of it. I mean, they have got an absolute giant who plays up front from sometimes 6'9" Kyle Hoodlin, I think you call him, or Hoodin. And the way we defend set pieces, it's a bit of a concern. But I looked at his stats and he's like, he played 13 games on loan last season, I think, in League Two. And he didn't even score a goal at that level and he's not scored this season. So hopefully we should have the players with like Ballard and 09. They should be able to kind of like do a job on them, hopefully. And we're should still win the game.
Well, looking at their results, last six they've only won one, and that was in October 21st to beat QBR, and they haven't won a game since. And they lost to Cardiff 4-0, Leeds 4-1, Hull 1-0. And they got a draw with Southampton, to be fair, at the weekend at home, which isn't a bad result. And drew away at Watford, which, you know, you don't know if that's a good result or not. But I think, you know, will we see a change in the forward area? Do you think you might put Meander through the middle instead of Russen? Do you think you'll stick with the same group?
I think you might give Meander a start. But I'm not sure of the other changes. I'm not sure how broken Dennis Sergin is, or because he seemed to be, you know, he was going to be involved, then he wasn't, and then, yeah, he had that incident before the international break where he pulled out the squad. So, yeah, that'd be another question mark. But
who would you bring him in for? Because, I mean, Hume's form's been a little better, and Huggins has been really excellent. So,
yeah.
You'd probably stick with the same if you're going to keep the same formation and line up.
And yeah, I always just feel wary about right foot defenders playing left back. I don't know why, because it happens either, and it's a tale as old as time with Sunderland. You know, we've had inverted fullbacks for a long time. You know, Phil Bardsley playing left back for a big stint. So yeah, I don't know why I'm worried about it, but I just feel it looks unnatural. But that's just me. Up front, I'd personally give Meander another chance. Because other than, you know, he didn't do too terribly, you know, he just looks a little. I know he's probably exactly what we should expect. Really, he's just not the finished article. And if he was the finished article, we wouldn't have picked him up for next to nothing.
What are your thoughts, Mick?
I don't really disagree with a lot of what's being said there. I think I would be tempted to give Maeda a go from the start. Although Rusin did only play 45 minutes on Saturday, so maybe you could argue that his performances, particularly at home, have helped us in our like attacking shape a lot recently. And I think Maeda still, when the game's stressed, he's a really good option to have off the bench, and hopefully we'll be in a situation again where we're winning comfortably with 20 minutes left, and that's ideal to bring on them kind of lads. Because I think that Roosen, like you pointed out, Gareth, is still our most first-team ready striker. So I think if you're looking long-term, certainly until at least January, to be playing him as your main striker, I think it's important to get as many minutes into him as possible and give him the best opportunity possible to get his first goal, and hopefully it'll be away. Other than that, I can't really see what changes we can make, really. Again, like the likes of Job, you could argue like he like needs a bit of a rest, but he didn't go away with England, did he? So he's just had 2 weeks of a rest. So really, to be honest, I don't think we need to change a great deal, because I think for all we've got our frailties, I am confident now that in these kind of bread and butter home games, I do think that we're capable of just swatting these teams aside, and I think that's what we'll do.
I think I'd be tempted maybe to give, I think it was being off the boil last few games, I might be tempted to say maybe we'll drop Bellingham in there and give Aushish a start.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, yeah.
And I'd probably stick with Russian up front for for tomorrow and give another bash. I mean, you have to ask questions about Roberts as well. I mean, you know, defend him in that he's the way he carries a ball and occupies defenders is a positive, but you know, how many games we played? 17 games, something like that, or more. And he hasn't had a goal or an assist this season. I mean,
yeah, he's an exciting player to watch, but I often wonder if he's one of those kind of perennial players that pops up on highlights packages quite a lot.
I mean,
doesn't contribute that much to the team.
Sorry, Rick, I think.
No, that's fine.
There's clearly a reason why Roberts, for all the ability and talent he has, that he's never progressed beyond this level of being like, obviously he excelled at Celtic, but 90% of the time you're playing against very, very weak opponents who are probably about League One level in this country. And then like he's never really made it above this like level of being top-end championship at best. So I think there's a reason for that, and that is his lack of kind of like output, like statistically and stuff. But I do think I'd still prefer Roberts in this game, because I think Huddersfield are sitting really deep, and I think the bar needs space to exploit the player well. So I think them space will open up later in the game if hopefully we're winning. But Roberts, I'd still really back him in like really tight spaces to get the ball. And I just think to be honest with Roberts, I think especially at home, I think we do need to overlap a bit more, because I think that does bring out the best, and we can like, so even if we don't necessarily give him the ball, if we make an overlap and run, it gives him the space to run into and cut in like he likes to do. So I just think still favour Roberts, but as I say, I think that's just purely because Barr needs like space to exploit, whereas Roberts is much better in tight areas.
I mean, there must be a reason for why our fullbacks don't overlap. Certainly I know like when Huggins was playing on the right, when Hume's playing on the right, he very rarely overlaps, he underlaps. And when they swapped around in the match, started doing the same thing, like Huggins did the same. So it must be tactical. There must be a reason for it. And I get to know, will it like damage the balance of the team if they didn't underlap, or if they moved outside, would that create more space for the opposition in the center of the park and leave Neil and Ekwa or Job more exposed? I'm not sure. But there's certainly something when you've got inverted wingers, you need an option to, you know, if it's not working out, for someone to be overlapping.
To be fair though, we
just cut that off.
We have created plenty of chances, we just haven't scored.
Yeah.
So I guess the argument would be, well, we've done everything but score. Would the underlapping fullback made much of a difference to that? I don't know. Would we create more chances?
The point I was making there was purely how to get the best out of Roberts. It wasn't really like a critique of like how we set up tactically or anything. I was just thinking of how you maybe get Roberts to have a bit of a better output, because it's a concern.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly think like we looked at how she did a better job of kind of stitching Clark and Roberts together a little more, like in terms of playing in more of a three, as opposed to how it was in the first half where they wouldn't really get that much support. You saw last season, you'd have our front three, I call it a front three, without a striker, but they would be working together a lot more, and you'd see little partnerships, and that work in triangles, but it doesn't really seem to be the case a lot of the time, unless Pritchard's on the pitch. Pritchard does a lot of that better, but Aushish also does that well too. So I'm thinking at that on Saturday, I thought, why don't we just cut out the middleman? Literally cut out the middleman, get rid of a striker and play 4-3-3 with a false nine in Aushish or Alex Pritchard or ITV2's Bradley Dack in an advanced role, and just have him playing as a link man between the two, our two most potent players, which are Clark and Roberts. Obviously, Roberts isn't a potent player because he's not got any assists or goals this season, but Clark certainly is. So we certainly need to be bringing the best out of him.
Well, I think we will be seeing a striker on Wednesday night. Who it is, I don't know. And I get the feeling it's going to be the first game of the season where it's going to be everyone going, bloody hell, that's freezing. it's going to be one of those, isn't it?
Definitely one for a big North Face jacket, isn't it?
Yeah. If you can get it delivered in time, yeah. If you get it delivered at the right place.
Yeah. Lots of orders going in for North Face jackets at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they give them out, don't they? Like at the BBC or whatever, because they've all got them. They must be like sponsored or something. Anyway, if North Face want to sponsor us and send some, nice coats that we can wear at the match and not be on telly with or anything, that's fine. I mean, they won't be listening to this. Anyone who wants to send us anything for free, just get in touch. And we will take it. As long as it doesn't implicate any negative vibes. That's probably it, really. Matt will be back, I assume, to review the Huddersfield game and preview the next game, which I can't remember who it is, who we're playing
Millwall.
On Saturday.
Millwall.
Millwall. Is that away?
Yeah.
Away, okay. So, yes, they'll be doing that. Millwall away on Saturday. So that'll be in the review of the Huddersfield game, sorry. And hopefully Stephen will be back on Monday with myself and there might be a reaction. Who knows? But as always, thank you very much for listening.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.